Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 19th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Ali Al-Mashakil. Ali has been a news producer and reporter for ABC's Baghdad Bureau, and most recently, public information officer to the United Nations. He arrived in Portland, Maine with his family only 3 months ago, but has already been on many news outlets here since Iraq has erupted in conflict. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Ali.
Thank you very much.
You were in a lot of danger in Iraq, possibly being perceived as a traitor because of your international affiliation and journalism experiences. Can you tell us about your work there and how that created a need for you to leave your homeland?
Actually, it's not just working in international media. There is the burden over my shoulder when I was working there. Actually, I would say there were three burdens and three layers of danger in my life while I was working there. First, as an Iraqi, and you can see now what's happening to all Iraqis, car bombs, IEDs, all over the country. The second thing, which is very effective in my life, I was living in Baghdad, and Baghdad is the capital. And Baghdad has the most concentration of car bombs, IEDs, people killed there for no reason, just being in the wrong place, wrong time. The second layer is being an international journalist working with international media. For the last 10 years, according to a statistic by Iraqi Journalist Syndicate, over 350 journalists were killed, kidnapped, intimidated, and even some of them left the country. This is a real burden over my shoulder, and also it's extended to my family, and it's affected all of our lives.
Isn't there special immigration status for people who work with international news information?
Not international, all the international. People who worked with American news outlets, yes, who were working in Iraq, there was, it's through the IOM.
Because it's recognized as being so dangerous.
Yes, yes. And this program started in 2008.
Mm. Wow. So how were you able to cope with the kind of ongoing stress that must have been part of your life as a journalist in Baghdad?
First, I had some techniques in overcoming the danger itself. I had to change my car, change the roads I go to. Sometimes I don't go to work. Sometimes I depend on the telephone or the mobile to do the work. Sometimes I change the province. I go to another province to do stories outside, not to stay in Baghdad. These are some of the techniques I used to do while working in Baghdad. But the pressure was there. The first thing for me to overcome pressure is I'm a believer. I believe in Allah, and I believe that every human being will reach an end, and you never win this going to happen. This has a negative and a positive aspect of this, but I concentrate on the positive. You don't know when you end, then you have to work. You don't know when you will end, you have to proceed. You don't know when to end, you have to go ahead.
So your faith kind of keeps you malleable and in action.
Yes, and also the support of my family. Family have been a great support, especially my wife. She's been there all the time supporting me and comforting me and giving me advices. Though she's sometimes putting pressure on me to leave the job or leave the country when we were there, and that's why we applied for the immigration status through IOM, and finally we got here after 5 years of the application. But she was there for me for a long time, and she's been helping, actually. All family members, my wife, my brothers, my sisters, my mother also, and also some of my friends who know and appreciate the danger I'm taking to be a journalist and to voice Iraqis.
Must have been scary for them, knowing you were in such a vulnerable position all the time.
It is. It is. This is especially for my wife and my mother. And my wife used to tell me, you think you are safe, you are never safe. Because she reads the news and watch TV and always car bombs, IEDs in the country. She has the feeling. She's like she's my inner conscience telling me it's time to stop. But
because you're so involved in the work, you might need that external consciousness to remind you you are in serious danger.
Yes, and or take a vacation. Sometimes she asks me to take a vacation, to go outside Baghdad, to change the place, or at least to be fresh when I get to Baghdad, fresh-minded, fresh with the ideas, and also fresh to with the feeling of the danger in the city.
Have you noticed a change in her since you've been here and in less danger?
Yes. I actually, they are at ease in the place. They love the place. We can move outside whenever we want. We can go outside at night as we did yesterday to watch the fireworks. They love the place, especially my kids. And if my kids are doing well, I think the family is doing well. My son went to school. He's in third grade and spent almost 6 weeks, the last 6 weeks in the school. And he loved it, loved his teachers, loves the school. And it's danger. It's different from the danger we used to feel. While every single day my son used to go to school, I was afraid for him. Every single day my wife used to go to school, she's a teacher, used to be a teacher, I was afraid for her. And the same for them when I go. Because it's family feeling, and at the same time, I am aware more than them maybe of the dangers that's in the street, and anything could happen, especially when politicians are not in good terms, things start to be very bad for the people of, especially the people of Baghdad.
And of course, that wasn't just you and your family. It was every family must have been scared all the time.
Yes, yes. Sometimes I tell this, I told this to a lot of people here in Maine. Sometimes, for the Baghdadis in general, they go to shopping or go to win their to bread for their families. Returning home becomes their utmost wish when they are outside and things deteriorate. And it's like this. You never know, things could get bad in the street. And you might think this is the end. You might not be able to return home.
It keeps you in the present moment. It keeps you living in the present moment. You're not thinking of next month. You're thinking of getting home with the bread.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And it is good because, and especially I'm talking about Baghdadis, they want to live their life. Mm-hmm. Now, with all these dangers, I have friends now at night go to restaurants. They go to parks. They want to live their life. They've been like this for 10 years. If this is the case, if they stop living, they will be dead inside their houses, dead from inside, empty.
That's very eloquent. That's, it's like the fences. You know, it keeps people out and it keeps you trapped in. And they're not going to be willing to be trapped in.
Yes. Yeah. And I talk to them on a daily basis, especially my friends in Baghdad and family. And they tell me that they go outside.
Yes.
They do drive in the streets of Baghdad with all what's happening. And they still dream. They still have hopes. They still think that things will get better, at least on a neighborhood level.
Mm-hmm. Ali, you are a newsman through and through. And my curiosity extends to where you get your news and information here in the United States, and if that's different than how you got your news and information when you were in Baghdad.
I would say it's relatively the same. I go to the websites I used to go in Iraq, and it's a news website. It's updated all the time with what's happening in the country. Also, I go to websites of TV stations, and my favorite is Al Hurra. People think it's Al Arabi or Al Jazeera, but Al Hurra is a very good news source for me about the situation in Iraq. Al Hurra Iraq. It's dedicated to Iraqi people. It's funded by the Pentagon. And the journalists there, I know some of them, they are very good and very professional. They give you what's really happening on the ground. Because we have in Iraq, there are over 40 TV channels. And most of them, if not all of them, they belong to parties. They have political affiliates. And from there, and because of my knowledge with the people and who are working there, they tend to switch. Not to switch. They present the news in a way to serve whom they are working for.
I think I'd like to say Al Hurra, H-U-R-R-A, means the free, and it's Pentagon funded. I'm curious, after hearing you say this, that I'm curious to go to that website and see the news from there.
Yes, but the problem is in Arabic. But
oh, it's all in Arabic. Oh, that's going to be tricky for me.
Yes. But they are very good.
Yeah.
Yes, they are very good. And they used to have, before what's happened, before June the 10th, what's happened in Mosul, they used to have 1 hour news bulletin. Now they have 2 hours. And it's like Iraqi local time from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. And it's very good. If at least give you the sense in the street. Mm-hmm. If not give you what's happening politically, because a lot of things happen in Iraq behind locked doors, at least give you the sense what's happening in the street. And they have reporters all over Iraq, not only in Baghdad, all over Iraq, which is good.
And this is something you have stayed up on. When I was talking to Ali before the show, I asked him how many hours a day he thinks he spends searching news and information. How many do you think?
6 to 7, sometimes 8, especially the first 3-4 days after the Mosul was taken by the ISIS. But it's my life. I think following what's happening in my country from two aspects. First, it's my life, and I care for what's happening in my country. And the second, as a journalist, I want to be ready. I want to be updated on a personal level. And I might, as I was doing for the last 3 weeks, I had a lot of interviews for radio stations with
MPBN.
MPBN. And I
Portland
was,
Press Herald, Bangor and Daily News.
Yes.
You're an expert on this.
Well, I don't want to say an expert. I am a good observant who is observing what's happening in the country. And also I get some information from my friends who are also good analysts, and some of them are even politicians in Iraq, on Facebook. And I follow what's happening through Facebook. And they put good links to what's happening in the country, good links to international analysts from the U.S., from British newspapers. So it's varied. And I get a lot of information, different information. And from there, I make my own point of view on my own analysis.
You're a consummate newsman. Are you hoping to work in news media here in the United States?
Yes, I'd love to. And I'm planning to. No job yet, but this is what I'm working on. I'm trying to get a job in the news or in media in the U.S., radio, TV, newspapers. But I prefer TV. I used to be a producer, a local reporter. It's teamwork, and it gives me the energy and gives me the feeling that I'm doing something, a teamwork. I am leaving a thumbprint.
Yes.
As a journalist.
And sharing that information with so many.
Yes.
Having lived and worked in a war zone, can you tell me what your thoughts and feelings were around the Independence Day celebrations here in Portland with the audible and visible explosions? Is that difficult for anyone in your family?
For me and my wife, wasn't, because we were prepared mentally. But this yesterday, we were there. My son, Yusuf, who is 4.5, actually was very afraid. And it took me like 7-10 minutes just to convince him that this is only light and sound and nothing wrong will happen to him.
Hard to understand when your experiences have been so different than that.
Yes. And I explained this before we go there, but he couldn't understand. He was very afraid. Actually, one of the reasons we had a car bomb close to our house when he was like 2.5, and I think it's really affected him. It makes him afraid of the loud sounds and its explosions. He thinks it's the thing that he experienced in Baghdad.
Yes, he's not alone. I know that's an issue for a number of immigrants and soldiers who have lived and worked in war zones. Very tricky. So what are your best hopes for your family? You have 3 young children and a wife. What are their dreams? What are your dreams for them here in Maine?
For me and my wife is to find a job. For us as a family to live our life that we missed in Iraq. And above all, I think, is to leave a thumbprint here in Maine. To be known, to be respected. To say we passed here, we passed through this road and we were here in Maine. Actually, one of the reasons for this idea comes to my mind. When I was in the university, I studied English literature. And one of the plays we studied was The Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller. And it talks about failure of Willy Loman, the main character. He's the father and he has a family. But this person, at the end, you realize that he failed to raise his family and to find out to be a real person and leave a thumbprint. And I read this, I was searching in the library, university library, and I read this criticism for the character, and it's still in my mind since I read this. Willy Loman, the main character, Willy Loman tried to put his thumbprint on a cake of ice on a hot July day. It, for me, it symbolized failure. And always it's with me. I want to succeed. Always, I tell this to my wife and my family and my friend, I want to leave a thumbprint on oak, a thumbprint on concrete, not cake of ice.
A substantial contribution to the community.
Yes.
You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. Today I'm having a conversation with Ali Al-Mashakil, who is originally from Baghdad, Iraq, and now lives with his wife and three children in Portland, Maine, having only arrived 3 months ago. Ali, you mentioned when we first met that your last name was misspelled by an immigration official on your formal documents. And I wondered if you realize just how common that story is, even a part of the American experience.
I didn't understand the question. What sense?
Well, I wonder if you realize how many people have that story. I have neighbors whose last name is Nguyen, and it was spelled Nguyen on there when they moved here. And people who have been named Cowper start to become called Cooper. People, Fitzgerald, have been written down as Fitzgerald. You know, this kind of...
It's tricky, actually. It's yeah. Tricky. And I think maybe it's cultural. I think first it has to do with the culture. Culture and the cultural differences to understand the names, what they mean. If you understand the meaning, then you will not misspell them. This is the from first aspect. Second thing, I think it has to do not in the U.S. The for me, my documents were processed in Jordan, and some people, because of the pressure, because of they have a lot of things to do, they misspell, and this misspelling will go with you all your life. It's a problem, but people know how to overcome this.
I think as you speak to people that you meet, and you meet a lot of people because you're a natural networker, ask them about their family names, because many, many of us have had our names misspelled. I have the same thing in my family's history. Immigration misspells names, and then you live with it.
You have to.
I just wondered if you knew that kind of helps you be more of an American.
Which is good. Now I feel more of an American.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Good.
Welcome to the country. Can we talk about Iraq and the country that lives in your heart for a minute? What is your fondest memory of your homeland as you were growing up? Smells, sounds, experiences. What important pieces of Iraq will you always carry with you?
It's Dijla, Tigris, the river. It's always in my mind. I think it's an eternal eyewitness to what is happening and what happened in the country. It's been there seeing its children or his children or her children there fighting, living their lives. Some people used to live, even now, by the river, swimming, their joys, their sadnesses.
The Tigris River runs right through Baghdad.
Yes.
So does the Euphrates, is that correct? Just a different part of the city?
No, just Tigris.
Just the Tigris through Baghdad.
Yes. Actually, I come from a city with a Euphrates, but I did not feel attached as I am to Tigris. Because Tigris for me, Baghdad. Tigris for me, when I first opened my eyes, to a new life, different life. Baghdad is far much different than other other places I lived in, inside Iraq. It's the liberal Baghdad. It's the free Baghdad. It's, for me, I know a lot of oppression there. I started living in Baghdad on my first year in university, and it's like 19 years old and starting to see the whole country through Baghdad. Actually, this was during the embargo days on Iraq in 1994, and a lot of suffering where I came from. But Baghdad, there was suffering, but different kind of suffering. People are suffering, but managing to overcome, managing to live their life, which is different from where I come from in the south. There was big pressure on them, big pressure on the people of the city I come from, because they were perceived through Saddam, that's the dictator who ruled before 2003, as enemies, and that they should not live a normal life. Electricity used to be in my hometown 2 hours a day. No clean water, no sewage. And the ruler or the governor used to be from a different place coming, and they just rule with a security point of view. Everybody is an enemy. Everybody is a suspect. And nobody is respected there. Till 2003, though things are different now. But Baghdad, it's different. I think if I, in Baghdad, I felt the liberty in sense that if I said what I said, for example, in the south or in Basra, in Baghdad, I would have been executed or been sent to jail. But Baghdad, different. They embrace you, the people. They embrace your ideas. They think of you as a human being, and they respect how you feel, especially if you are talented, especially if you have something to say, and how to say it also is important.
When was the most peaceful era during your lifetime in Iraq? What were the best times?
I would say 2004 and early 2005. The whole 2004, I got married, and also I got 2005, I got my first son, Ahmed. And it's the time I really was working with the Times of London and really learning the craft as a journalist. I was really happy to be a journalist, knowing and working with international journalists and understanding how journalism and the role of a real journalist. These days were my best, I think. The worst was the whole 2007, because I had to leave Baghdad. I left Baghdad from October 2006 till November 2007. And they were my worst, because I had to leave Baghdad. And a very dear person passed away, December 2006.
So those dates aren't that far apart, your highs and your lows. Must have been a really dramatic, a dramatic period.
Yes, I don't know if this is a normal human thing, but I've seen and talked to a lot of people in the past 10 years, moved around the country. A lot of things happened in my country, elections, beginning of the turmoil, the beginning of the Al-Qaeda uprising in Iraq, a lot of contradictory things. And I learned a lot from this. And I had a big experience from moving around my country, talking to Iraqis, talking to also people who came to Iraq to see Iraq. And I learned a lot during the course of these last 10 years. And this brings me to something. I was, 2008, 2009, I was thinking of writing a book. And I was collecting a material. I don't know why I stopped. But the two headlines or two titles for the book are in my mind all the time. One of them is Rediscovering Iraq. As I told you, I had the chance to travel all over Iraq. Or the farthest point to the south, farthest point to the north, met different people, different ideas, how they envisage what happened in the country. And I was thinking of Sweet Nothings. Really. Sweet Nothings in the sense that after almost now 11 years, and you think as nothing happened in Iraq, as we are back to 0 point, as we are back to what we hoped that we will never be there, but we are back to sectarian war, back to division, and we might go to even further in the minus. We might lose the country Iraq we knew or we know now, and we end up with three Iraqs, and you don't know where your heart should go.
Devastating. If you were in charge of the world and you could make anything happen, what would be your solution for Iraq at this point?
The problem is no one can tell what kind of solution is possible, because it's everybody will look to the problem from his angle, though there are problems there. But politically speaking, there are steps need to be taken to solve the problem. I think first step is to go under the umbrella of a parliament, the elected parliament, go for a speaker, president, elect and choose a prime minister. And from there, a united Iraq, united politicians can move ahead and liberate the rest of Iraq from ISIS or IS as it is now. This is politically speaking. But as a human being, I want to close my eyes, open my eyes, and find peaceful Iraq. People are living together, forget their differences. And even if they have differences, they know how to solve this peacefully, which is not the case, unfortunately.
I join your vision. I think it's so sad to think of people spending their whole lives, every day, scared. And it's hard to make peace from all the fear. And so I wish it so.
Yes, and it reminds me also of an Arabic proverb. It says, health is a crown, is a crown on the head of healthy people. Only sick people or ill people can see this crown. And now as Iraqis, we can see this. We can see democratic countries. We can see people are living in peace. But why this is happening to us? This is the question. And as I said, we feel that we are sick, democratically speaking. It's not the democracy we dreamt of. It's not what we planned for. Unfortunately, yes.
It's in process. Ali, I think few, if any, immigrants have so quickly made it onto the front page of the Portland Press Herald as you have. Under the circumstances, you are one of the foremost experts on Iraq in the news in the state, and if not in the in the region. Ramadan Karim to you, and thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you very much, Kate. Thank you for hosting me in your show. Thank you for your audience, for receiving and accepting my ideas about Iraq. Thank you all.
We will close today's program with a song by oud player Nasir Shama. From the Heart is the name of the song.